come up on the tight wire.
I'm in the arena, sitting across from my good friend Benjamin Alida-san.
And I'm in the arena as well, otherwise known as Studio B. Sitting across from my good friend, Daniel Chacon.
And welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
Our show today focuses in on
happiness. It's a theme show. We decided we were going to talk a little bit about happiness because why did we decide this, Ben?
Because we need to think more about happiness.
As writers, as artists, that's going to be our perspective. But of course,
and
anyone.
As people and as a culture.
Anyone could be happy.
That's
we
right.
Hope. And anyone could be unhappy. And today we'd like to probe a little bit about happiness. Ben's going to share a little something that he wrote.
Just musings on happiness.
Musings on happiness. And
you're going to share. What is the title of your piece?
Buildings and Homes.
Oh, that's right.
Buildings and Homes, yeah. And it's just about things that I like. And we're also going to read and talk about some poems.
That make us happy.
That make us happy. And we're going to talk about that in relation to happiness. So stick around. It's going to be a happy show.
But they couldn't stop Jack or the horses laughing. And they couldn't prevent Jack from feeling happy.
Here are my musings on happiness for this week's edition on our theme, Happiness, for Words on a Wire. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Perhaps the greatest achievement of what we refer to as the Enlightenment is a document called the American Declaration of Independence. We are all entitled to have a life, a free one, liberty, to be liberated, to be free enough to pursue happiness. Ah, there's the rub. How to pursue and arrive at happiness. What a dream. What a beautiful dream. Of course, wise as Thomas Jefferson and the Founding Fathers' words were, they presented us not only with a dream, but with a challenge. Pursue happiness. We have never, as a people and as individuals, paid close enough attention to this all-important part of the Declaration of Independence. Who can ever truly be free and live a life, I say a life, without some modicum of happiness? What is a life lived in misery? What is a life lived in sadness? What is a life lived in such abject poverty that happiness is not even a hope? I've often quoted my mother, Eloisa, who told me more than once that all she wanted of her children was that they be happy, a high bar, if ever there was one. I've been thinking a lot about happiness lately, perhaps because I've been through some personal difficulties of late that have tested my resilience and my commitment to life. To life. Sometimes, for whatever reason, we make bad choices, and those bad choices can lead to very dark places, and in some instances result in quite the opposite of life. They lead to death. The good book says, I set before you this day life and death. Choose life. Choose life. I would like to think that now, in my 58th year of living, that I have finally and deliberately and consciously chosen life. And having chosen to live, I am free now to pursue happiness. I have far too often chosen sadness, chosen to dwell on the scars of my past battles over the promise of the morning sun. I have too often sat cursing the darkness instead of lighting a candle in the dark. Such a simple thing, to light a candle. Not a difficult task at all. I was rolling around in my living room last night, playing with my dog. I was laughing as Buddy and I rolled around on the carpet as he barked and leapt, and I was a boy again. On New Year's Day, I worked on a painting in my back patio of my new house. It was a warm and beautiful day, and I listened to Annie Lennox sing her heart out as I worked on my painting. At a certain point, I was standing on a ladder as I worked on my painting, and I looked up at the clear winter sky, blue as blue could be, and in a pure moment of joy, a smile shot through me. And I thought, I have never been so alive, Not ever. Not in the arms of a woman. Not in the arms of a man. Not in the arms of anyone, but in my own arms. I stretched out my hands towards the sky and let out a laugh, and I thought, this is heaven. I hung the large painting, 6 feet long by 3.5 feet wide, in my bedroom. There is a dark sky that slowly, slowly clears. 2 green leaves float down towards the earth, and there is a red, imperfect rectangle near the bottom left-hand corner that represents my heart. The painting is called, After the Storm, My Heart. That's the thing about happiness. We have to go through great pain in order to arrive at its gates. To quote my favorite Emily Dickinson poem, after great pain, a formal feeling comes. I love that poem. The formal feeling, of course, is the poem, the putting down into words what you have survived. To arrive at happiness, you have to transcend your own human frailties instead of bathing in them like hogs bathing in the mud, living day after day in the stench of their own bodily fluids. And yet, so many of us do exactly that. We never learn to forgive ourselves, let alone forgive others for how they have hurt us. Hurt. The artist James Drake once wrote, "Let's all say hurt together." We cannot possibly live our lives without hurting other people. Most of us do not hurt others with intent, nor do we hurt others with malice. We hurt and are hurt because we are human beings, and it comes with the word life. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Yes, let's all say hurt together. And after we've said it, let's sit a moment in the aftermath of that word and move forward in the pursuit of happiness. There's a problem, of course. I'm making up that most of us believe that happiness is either an unattainable ideal or the banal and shallow musings of a populace mired in the sentimental rhymes of a Hallmark card. Who writes those things anyway? I bet they make more money than I do, but I digress. I'm a writer. I'd like to think I'm a serious one. And frankly, happiness doesn't make for great literature. Fine. But hell, I don't want to live the tragedies of my characters, though honestly, they sometimes mirror my own life a little too close for comfort. It gets down to this. I think we're all a little afraid of happiness. Some of us are a lot afraid of happiness. Hell, give us tragedy any day, any excuse to be sad or melancholy, anything to keep living in the malaise of the literary expectations of book reviewers everywhere. Please, no real emotions allowed. Only irony and subtlety, please. That's the thing with happiness. It's neither subtle nor ironic. Happiness is sincere and humble and honest. We live in a culture that devalues sincerity and humility and honesty. We not only devalue it, we make fun of it. I want to get back to the subject of my mother. She was the happiest person I've ever met. She was also the wisest, most profound, most generous, and kindest person I have ever had the pleasure of knowing. She was the most civilized human being ever to inhabit the country that I call my life. I don't know exactly what her secret was. I think partially she was happy because she believed in happiness, that she deserved to be happy. And she reveled in making other people happy, too. She not only desired happiness for herself, she desired it for everyone around her. Now that's generosity. She was alive. She was free. She not only pursued happiness, she achieved it. They don't give medals and awards for that one. We don't admire happy people in our culture. We admire the Kardashians. We admire rich people who've made billions of dollars making the people under them decidedly unhappy. How to pursue happiness? I don't know. I'm a work in progress. Ask anyone who knows me. I think we have to take things one step at a time. I want to get back to my Emily Dickinson poem. The poem ends with these lines. This is the hour of lead. Remembered if outlived, as freezing persons recollect the snow. First the chill, then the stupor, then the letting go. Yes. The hour of lead, the hour to put the pencil to the page, the hour of expressing one's hurts, one's rage, one's disappointment. There can be no happiness without the expression of rage and disappointment and hurt, without facing the hour of lead. We have outlived the snow, and we remember the chill, the stupor, and if we are lucky, very, very lucky, we also experience the letting go. The letting go, the pain. The letting go, the hurt. Transcendence. That's what happiness is. The ability to transcend our own shortcomings. God, we have so many. We have so many. I'm thinking of last night, how I rolled around on the carpet with a puppy who only knows how to be a puppy. And in that moment, I allowed myself to be happy because I didn't act my age or play a role or feel anything except a puppy's lick on my face and the feel of his soft fur on my fingers, and I could be a boy, and I could be free. I think we all have it in us to be happy. The question is, do we want to dedicate our life pursuing it? Do we think it's worth it? Wouldn't it be a lovely world if we chased happiness instead of a blessed buck whose worth is questionable? Today, as I sit and read this, I'm happy. Imagine that. I'll take the moment and run with it. My dog Buddy, running right beside me. This is Benjamin Alida Sines for Words on a Wire.
I'm so glad, I'm so glad, I'm glad.
One of the true things I think about happiness that I'm beginning to discover in this other part of my life, this second half, I suppose you could say, is that it's true. All the cliches we ever heard about happiness are true. Mm-hmm. You know, don't worry, be happy. Mm-hmm. That's true. It's actually true. I mean, if you don't worry and you're not emphasizing worry, but you go ahead and allow yourself to be happy, you actually have access to that happiness. One of the things that used to make my mom happy was driving through neighborhoods at night and looking into rich people's homes. You know, she would love it. She'd like to do that all the time. And now, today, you know, sometimes I'll be walking through Sunset Heights on the way home, and I'll look into a home at night, and you see the yellow light, and it makes me happy. And just buildings in general make me happy.
Too Hopper-esque for me.
Well, I didn't say they made Ben happy. So this is a little piece on things that I like to do.
Okay.
That make me happy.
Nice.
It's called Buildings and Homes. I like to take a large rock in my fist and beat off the wood plank so I can go inside. I like large open windows in warehouses scattered with spent desire, pushed over filing cabinets, a pile of chairs near a window. I enter offices and sit at rusted metal desks where I go through drawers, burnt out books of matches and makeshift crack pipes, bottle caps, meth heads left. Sometimes I find paper clips, which I put in my pocket for later, as they might hold together the pages of my life that haven't happened yet. I once broke into an old hotel that hadn't had a guest in 40 years, on the gray dark side of the city, some investor's nightmare. In the ballroom, I walked underneath a pterodactyl's nest of wires and metal bones that used to be a chandelier. I walked up the wide, winding red carpet stairs, a little purple now, some parts smeared black, and I looked down at the expansive floor, a tipped-over refrigerator and torn-up couches, and I pretended that everything was white and clean, and I heard a Strauss waltz coming slowly into the light, like a procession of ghosts, beautiful blue Danube rising over the see-through people. They wore white, white dresses and black ties, and they were spinning and spinning, in the river of song, of song, of song. A champagne goblet appeared in my hand. Forget that I'm a Mexican and wouldn't have been allowed in this place 40 years ago, unless to clean. And then a whip of white from a flashlight slid across the floor like a mini searchlight, and I heard boots getting closer. So I ran in sync with the Strauss down the stairs, Cinderella me, and I got the heck out of there. I like to look into people's homes at night when I'm walking by or slowly driving in my car, into the sea of their big windows, into all that warm light. I prefer when no one is there but silent furniture and the still lives hanging on the walls. I like dining room tables ready to be set, the stillness of empty wine glasses and glass vases without flowers, ready for possibility. I like stout grandfather clocks, empty couches, Tiffany lamps, and mute pianos, where I imagine the people who used to sit there while sipping brandy snifters or white cups of tea are all my dead. My mother at the piano, elegant in a bouffant hairdo, my father thin and handsome, thin tie, my grandparents sitting all four of them on the couch, and Debbie, the little girl I knew, in a Sunday dress, well-behaved, watching it all, and everyone and everyone and everyone is listening to Lucy at the piano play a song.
Put your hands together and let's just go to church. That's it, that's it. Yeah. Oh happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus washed, when Jesus
washed.
This poem by Frank O'Hara has always made me smile. It is both self-mocking and sincere. It is both ironic and making fun of oneself and also celebrating oneself. And always, 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 I love to go back and read this poem if I feel like I need to smile. Frank O'Hara's Autobiographia Literaria. When I was a child, I played by myself in a corner of the schoolyard, all alone. I hated dolls and I hated games. Animals were not friendly and birds flew away. If anyone was looking for me, I hid behind a tree and cried out, "I am an orphan." And here I am, the center of all beauty, writing these poems. Imagine.
Nice. That does make you happy. I can see. Your face looks very, very happy.
It makes me laugh.
Well, that's cool. And, you know, I think poems sometimes should make us happy. They don't always have to be sad and bring us into really dark places.
They don't. They really, really don't.
But what about a novel? Could you sustain a novel, a 350, 400-page novel that was just all happy? That would be like Mark Twain calls heaven, a little boring.
Yeah, I know. No, it would be a little boring.
You need to have some tension in a novel.
I can't imagine such a novel.
You know, and it's really, the fact is, I think one of the beautiful things about happiness is that it comes from a place that has experienced also pain. And without the pain, the happiness isn't going to really mean much.
Right. That's why sometimes we really like happy endings. It's a payoff, right?
Right.
They go through all this crap.
Absolutely.
And then like we say, okay, at last, you know, or even romantic comedies play off that. Finally gets to kiss her.
Absolutely. We're waiting for that moment. We're waiting for the happiness to come. You know what really I've been thinking a lot about lately as I'm designing this class that I'm teaching right now, where we're looking at light and dark, white space and black space, and good and evil, that there is a quote that comes from, I think it comes from Ezekiel. Let me find it. Isaiah 45:7. It says, "I form the light and create darkness. I bring prosperity and create disaster. I, the Lord, do all these things." And what this says to me, to us, is that happiness is great. And it is a gift. It's a gift from the universe. And we should enjoy it. And we should access it because it's there. Whether we participate in it or not, happiness exists.
Happiness exists. And often we choose not to participate.
Absolutely.
In it.
Because we sometimes, I think, choose to go with those intense emotions that have, emotion is an intense chemical release in the brain. And we can get addicted to chemical releases in the brain. We can get addicted to depression. We can get addicted to sadness. We can get addicted to all these things.
And
but we can also get addicted to happiness.
And because we need to dedicate our lives to producing in our bodies more dopamine.
Absolutely, absolutely. But this quote tells me that, yeah, you know, happiness is there, but also sadness. And the sadness, I believe if we accept sadness as a gift, as if it came from the universe, as if I, the Lord, have made this sadness, that it just makes the happiness so much sweeter.
I do too.
And, you know, and happiness should be organic, and it should be free, and it should be out there, and we should go ahead and access it.
Yeah, and as I said in my little essay, I do think that we need to pursue it more directly than we often do. And I think that sometimes we find ourselves that we're only happy when we're not happy.
Absolutely.
How sad is that?
Yeah. I think we get so addicted to our sadness when the opportunity of happy comes that we say no. So have you ever heard of the law of intention?
The what?
The secret. The law of attraction. That's what it is. The law of attraction. It's this idea that has been articulated in so many popular culture books lately, and as well as What the Bleep, based on quantum physics, you know, which isn't really quantum physics. It's just kind of pop physics, you know, applied to New Age beliefs. But it's the idea that whatever thoughts you have, you attract whatever thoughts you have to you. So if you're always thinking of depressing things are always going to come to you. If you're always thinking that you're a loser, for example, you're going to find evidence in the universe constantly that you're a loser. Mm-hmm. And even though they're pop spirituality that is, you know, packaged to make $1 million, there is some truth to the fact that the attitude that you bring to the universe is what the universe is going to bring to you.
Right. And I think part of that attitude is a kind of sense of celebration. We need to be celebratory.
Absolutely.
Do we celebrate events in our lives? Do we? Do we mark them? Do we have those rituals? Graduations. Right. To celebrate graduation is a good thing. People say, oh, I don't want to participate. Why not? Celebrate the fact that you spent 4 years or 5 years or 6 years or 8 years pursuing a degree and you finally got it. It's something to celebrate.
Absolutely.
Christmas is something to celebrate. And to kind of ignore those markers is to be uncelebratory.
You know, I think one of the keys to a happy life is never say no. If somebody says, hey, Ben, you want to go to the movies? Say yes. If someone says, hey, you want to go do this? Say yes. Because when you say no, you close yourself off to opportunity. It reminds me a little bit of Rilke's advice to a young poet. He says, a poet shouldn't be too ironic. And what is irony but saying the opposite of what is true? So if you're ironic and it's raining outside and you go out into the rain and you stand there and you go, oh boy, this is a beautiful day, immediately you are closing yourself off to the gift of a rainy day.
Right.
Because suddenly it's going to be dark. You're not going to see anything. You're not going to enjoy anything. And say, oh boy, how lovely to have my clothes all wet. But if you go out there and you see that rain, and you receive that rain like a gift, then that rain is probably going to be a gift, and the universe is going to rain on you and happiness. And
I agree. And speaking of celebratory, I want to read you this little poem by Lucille Clifton. It's very famous, and she celebrates her body.
Oh, I love this poem.
And it always makes me laugh, and I love
yes,
to read it.
This is a celebratory poem. Let's hear it.
Homage to my hips. By the late Lucille Clifton. These hips are big hips. They need space to move around in. They don't fit into little, petty places. These hips are free hips. They don't like to be held back. These hips have never been enslaved. They go where they want to go. They do what they want to do. These hips are mighty hips. These hips are magic hips. I have known them to put a spell on a man and spin him like a top.
Oh, that's great.
Good for her.
Absolutely. You celebrate. That poem that makes me happy. I don't have a copy of it on me right now, but I think I could say it by memory.
Okay.
It's a poem by Jose Montoya, the California poet, one of the founders of the RCF, the Royal Chicano Air Force, or the Royal Chicano Artistic Front. This poem, I've always liked it, and I've liked it ever since his nephew, Andres Montoya, who was my good friend for many years, used to recite it all the time as if it were the most profound, brilliant poem in the world. It's called the Moco Poem. For our listeners who don't know what a moco is.
It is snot.
Snot, yes. It's a booger. and darn it, we should celebrate even boogers. But anyway, I'm going to celebrate mocos right now.
Okay.
I hope I'm not paraphrasing it. I recall the poem goes like this. A moco poem. And if you see a moco on my bigote, don't suffer me shame by keeping silent. Tell me about it. I've always loved that poem.
I think it's necessary to examine things in life. And I think sometimes we examine the dark places and we assume that all of our examinations and meditations ought to be on the more serious side. But I also think that that happiness is a serious thing, and we need to take it seriously. Or, you know, our life's not worth living. Like anyone else, I've had my troubles and I've gone through my sadnesses, but I've had a lot of joy and happiness in my life, a lot of it. And I think part of happiness and its pursuit is, do we allow ourselves to enjoy things?
Wow.
Or do we always look at it in a different way? There was a mystic or a spiritual director back in the 70s, and his name was Henry J.M. Nouwen. He was a monk. And he wrote once in one of his books, I used to get angry at the interruptions to my work until I discovered that my interruptions were my work.
Yeah.
That's absolutely joyful. You smiled after I said that because it's like, it's an insight. It's like, if we look at people that way as interruptions, and because we're so focused on this, then we're not experiencing the world as if we could control it. Mm-hmm. We can control what happens in a day. I mean, I would be very frustrated as chair if I go into my office intending to do A, B, C, and D.
Mm-hmm.
And I often, that day, even though I can be in the office for 4 or 5 hours, accomplished A because other things happened while I was there.
Absolutely.
And that's my work. And I don't consider the day to be a failure. If I judged the day only by the agenda I had when I walked out the door, then the day would be a failure.
Right, because then your identification is with what you've done, not where you are.
Right.
And that brings us to the subject of writers and happiness. I think writers and artists, especially those who have reached some level of, I won't say success, but some level in their career where they have institutionally or otherwise built a life that gives them time to write. And I mean time to write, not just butt time.
Right.
That's what Paco Taibo calls it, butt time, when you're sitting on your writing. And we're very fortunate to have jobs that give us time to write. So we could have days where we don't have to be anywhere. And those days we can write, but most likely we're not going to be writing the entire time. We are going to be just living in the moment. And I think it's a very big challenge for people to have time in front of them without having to do something, because everybody always got to do something to feel like they're accomplished. You got to get this list of things done, but to just be without your mind going to depressing and sad places.
But the key to happiness, I believe, really, in many ways, because my mother was like this as I watched her, the ability to be able to enjoy oneself without anyone else around.
Right, yeah.
Without having to be entertained.
Well, your mom is Picasso.
Yeah. Happiness. I think we all deserve to be happy. That's what we wish for all of our listeners today.
And
happiness.
And so as you're listening to the show, we would like to give you a challenge, and that is to write what happiness means to you and send it to one of us at you can send it to me at danchacon@utep.edu or
bsigns@utep.edu.
And send us your statement on happiness, and we'll have you read it on the air. It could be a poetic license, a series of poetic license on happiness. What makes you happy?
Thank you for listening to today's show on happiness.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
I'm Benjamin Alita Signs.
And don't forget,
the next book you read could make you
happy.
My baby's the best. Yes, she's the tops. Once we start to love, we never stop. Jump for joy. Jump for joy.